Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken. Episode number 452, recorded May 11th, 2025. Happy Mother's Day!
Yep, Mother's Day at the time of recording, and we're spending it together talking about Star Trek.
Yeah, not paying attention to our wives that are also mothers.
Right.
How bad of us.
So, yeah, so today we're covering two one-shots. One is Lore War number one, which is setting up the whole big crossover event of the summer. Or, yeah, I guess it's the summer.
It's summer. Event. Yeah, it's bad.
And then the other one is a one-shot they did to celebrate the release of Section 31 TV movie a few months back.
Which, it is a prequel. Kind of like the Picard series. So it gives us a little background before the movie begins.
Yeah, I'm so glad they didn't try to stretch this into, you know, countdown to Section
Right.
31 and have it like a five issue thing.
Exactly.
I
that
think they
really
were
wasn't.
Stretching it for one issue.
Exactly. Really wouldn't have been necessary. So we get to see more details about Empress Georgiou's, how she became the Empress,
right.
Which we found out enough, I think, personally, in the movie, but we learn more in this book.
Right.
Did you enjoy it?
No.
No, I found it, well, I didn't hate it. I just found it to be, yeah, okay and unnecessary.
So I did not like the show, the movie. I thought it was probably one of the weaker outings. And then when they said they were coming out with a prequel, there was a part of me that was kind of excited. I was like, okay, cool. We're going to find out how Rachel Garrett's involved and all this backstory. Mm. So I was actually kind of excited when I first heard about a prequel. And then, you know, right before it came out, it was just like, oh, it's going to be about little kid Georgiou, you know, and how she became emperor. And I'm like, eh, we saw that. I want to see all the stuff we didn't see in the movie, you know, on how
Right.
they ended up all on that mission. But
Right.
anyways, we'll talk about that here in a minute.
Yeah.
But you
yeah
want to
it's a
talk
very
about Lore War first? Or go ahead.
yeah Lore War, let's talk about that, and we'll just save all that Section 31 goodness for the second half of the podcast.
Sounds good.
Yes, Lore War. Okay, so Lore War, I'm just going to do it because, you know, anybody who's listening to recent episodes knows what is leading up to all this. So we do finally get to see Lore's universe that he has made with Data's sweatshop labor. Then what happens next? So here we go. Lore War, published date April 2025, creative team writer Christopher Cantwell, Colin Kelly, and Jackson Lansing. So all three of them are together on this. Artist David Tinto, colorist Lee Lowridge, letterer Clayton Cowles, design and production, as always, Neil Yataki, group editor Heather Antos, editorial assistant Cassandra Jones. We got three covers. Cover A presents blue-colored versions of Sisko, Worf, Dr. Crusher, Sax, and I think Sato, maybe, inside of the holy, smiling, golden head of Lore, the god android of all reality. They all seem to be trying to get out of Lore's head. Art by Malachi Ward. Malachi Ward? I'm not sure. Cover B features a Lower Decks drawing style of Lore talking to and holding Data's head that is decapitated, of course. Lore is semi-quoting Shakespeare saying, "Alas, poor Data, I killed him well." Art by Chris Finoglio. Oh, I'm sorry, there's four covers. Anyway, the first retailer and set of cover presents many characters from the Star Trek 2022 and Defiance series of comics. They are sprinkled across the two halves of the cover. The left half is in red and black ink, And the right is in white, black, and kind of a slate gray color. And there's lots of batoliths. So, and that art is by J.J. Lendl. Second retailer instead of cover presents Worf's big head in profile, dominating the upper half of the cover. Shaxx, Lore, and Defiant share the lower half of the cover. Art is by Joe Quinones. A disembodied voice speaks from the heavens. In the beginning, there was Lore. He was not a man, he was a blueprint. His was the will that opened the way. He created all that there is and all that there will ever be. Stars to worlds to galaxies. Believers say he did it for love. Skeptics say for glory. But only the great mind that connects the stairways knows the truth and speaks it in a tongue only he can ever understand. Lore says with acidic disdain, I did it to watch you squirm. Lore's universe is a recreation of the Milky Way galaxy that was, complete with four all too familiar quadrants with their own Lore spin to them. The Gamma Quadrant contains recreations of Wattis, Brax, and other planets, but now repurposed to support Lore's whims. The Delta Quadrant contains recreations of Borg Prime, Hiroga, and other planets, but repurposed for Lore's needs. The Beta Quadrant contains recreations of Romulus as a labor planet focusing on nanotech export. Kronos as a war planet that is home to Lore's Academy. And Organia, a dead world. And finally, the Alpha Quadrant contains recreations of Vulcan, a quarantined world. Ferengar, a labor planet focusing on latinum ion battery exports. Bajor, a planet designated as a control world whose details are classified. Cardassia Prime, that is a labor planet that exports refined ore. And finally, Earth, that is a labor planet focused on exporting foodstuffs and is the home of Starfleet Command. On Earth, we see Benjamin Sisko, his son Jake, and his wife Jennifer walking in a crowded thoroughfare on their way to work. Ben bids his family well as he breaks off to join his work partner Bev in food creation. The huge squares of soylent beige-looking disgusting stuff, but apparently it's what people live on. Ben speaks to Bev of dreams. In them, his mother is powerful and speaking to him. He does not tell his family about the dreams. Later, after work, Ben and Bev help out in an illegal medical facility, helping kids and the needy. On his way home, Ben is attacked and knocked to the ground by Kalis, who is there to meet him and join forces. But Ben acts like a wimp who does not know who Kalis is. Frustrated, Kalis brings down a batolith in a death blow on Ben that Sisko catches with his bare hands. The magic power imbued in Kalis's blade causes memories of a previous world and Sisko's life flood back to him. He now knows who he is, what this world is, and what he and Kalis must do. Sisko tells Kalis to meet him in 2 hours by the city wall and don't get caught. Sisko goes home and shaves his full head of hair off. Now that's the Sisko we know and love. Sisko is giving up his family yet again. When will this end? He leaves their apartment, expecting never to see them again, at least not that version of them. Meanwhile, on the LSS Defiant, its captain, Alexander Rozhenko, has hunted down the Free Syndicate and is awaiting his father's arrival so they can together take them down yet again. Again? Have we done this before? High Admiral Worf arrives in the LSS Enterprise, and together they attack three Free Syndicate ships captained by Nymira, Yar, and Ro. Over open channels, the three captains say Worf and Alexander will likely destroy them all, but they will return in 5 or so years so that they can do this all over again. The ships are destroyed, but not before three transporter signals facilitate the captain's escape into a tachyon pocket. Later in the LSS Enterprise, Lieutenant Commander Julian Bashir emerges from a Free Syndicate Delta Flyer class fighter. He is a spy for Lore that gathered information on the Syndicate for years. Julian asks Worf how many times they fought the Syndicate to near annihilation, only to have them escape, rebuild, and engage Lore's forces in the exact same confrontation. Just as Worf is starting to understand what Julian is saying, the big old bad old Paul Wraith Shax enters the hangar bay and shoots Julian, which ends the sacrilegious conversation. Shax merely says those who are ungrateful for what he provides do not deserve their own breath. Meanwhile, on Bajor, an attractive redhead Bajoran woman standing partway down a huge staircase into a temple of lore stands at a podium reading from an unholy book. She reads words of his blessings. She says that he has no heart, yet we can feel his love. For he is our prophet, for he is our Lord, in Lore's name. The crowd at the ground level on their knees scream, "In Lore's name!" As the view pans up, we see the top of the huge staircase ends in Lore's open mouth that is attached to an equally huge statue of Lore's head. The huge head and a tall arch adorn Lore's temple. Meanwhile, Sisko and Kalis are hoboing it across the U.S. in the boxcar of a train. Back in the temple, Lore is giving Data more of his never-ending instructions and derision. In the long conversation, we learn that Lore is insane and sadistic, with the galaxy's inhabitants treating them like flies that he likes to pull the wings off of. He manipulates events to give people hope and purpose before he takes it all away from them. He breaks the Free Syndicate for grins and then encourages them to rebuild until he breaks them again. Lore is especially interested in Earth and calls it his special child. Some children he does not mind ending permanently, like the Maquis. Sato overhears the conversation in her apparent role as some kind of comms tech for Lore. She switches channels and contacts the Maquis leadership to warn them Lore is personally coming for them now. Spock and you, who are Borg, in command of an armada of Borg cubes, takes the warning and tells Sato while they fight Lore and die, she must carry out her mission to free Lore's most dangerous prisoners in the lower level dungeons of the temple. Those people are out of alignment with Lore's reality and are the key to victory. One in particular she must free while Lore is distracted. You must free a god. In Bozeman, Montana, the site of the first contact between humans and Vulcans, Sisko, Kalis, and Bev arrive and walk up to the famous statue of Zefram Cochrane. Next to Cochrane is the Phoenix, but also is a much larger statue of Lore, who is extending his left fingers downward towards Cochrane's fingers, who are reaching up to receive the wisdom of God. To be continued in Star Trek Defiant, issue number 26.
So is the two finger thing something?
I think, isn't that the,
Why is he
isn't that
reaching
a,
down with two fingers and the other one's reaching up with two fingers? What?
well, isn't that a spin on the Da Vinci painting?
Oh,
You know, God reaching down from the clouds and man reaching up.
Maybe. I don't
Yeah, I
remember the
think.
two fingers like this though.
I don't remember that particular detail either, but I assume that probably was the case, but I'd have to look it up. A quick Google search could settle it. The main
Could.
point is, Everything's remade. Instead of him, apparently, instead of Lore remaking all of creation, he's only remaking the Milky Way, which is interesting.
Yeah, and only one universe, so all the multiverses. Is he creating multiverses too, or is it just this one universe?
The book doesn't say,
Right.
but it does go to great pains to describe the Milky Way, the new lore version of the Milky Way. And doesn't it say something about there's a barrier around it, so there's no reason to even think about anything beyond the Milky Way galaxy?
Yeah, so maybe anything that's outside the galaxy is still normal.
Or doesn't exist. He destroyed everything, and just because he can't split, well, he is a god, but maybe he can't split his focus beyond beyond the bounds of a galaxy. I don't know.
Right.
Or maybe it's more the fact that it would be too difficult to explain all that in a comic book. So the writers are purposely keeping it narrowed down into one galaxy of which we're very familiar with, the readers are familiar with. So.
Yeah, I thought it was funny that you literally went through almost every planet in the little map.
Yeah. Right. So they got a
Matt,
cool map.
yeah, I don't think you went through all of them, but
I
you went through a
didn't.
good chunk of
Many. Yes.
them.
Yeah, so they got, I mean, any fan of Star Trek at one point or another would have seen the top-down view of the Milky Way and where the quadrants are and what planets are in what quadrants, and we all know that stuff. So they did that in one page of this book. Or was it two pages? Anyway, it's a big drawing, but they show Lore's little spin on things.
Yeah, I just find it weird how, according to this map, I mean, I know we're talking about a whole galaxy and it's not real, but just looking at like Earth to Cardassian Prime versus Earth to Kronos, I mean, Kronos is a lot further away than Cardassian Prime, but I guess we started exploring the beta quadrant before we went further out in the alpha quadrant itself,
Yeah, good question.
because even
Good
Ferenginar,
point.
I mean, they don't find Ferenginar and stuff until much later. I don't know, it just seemed weird that like the beta quadrant are all the old Taz planets, and then the alpha quadrant is all the next generation planets. I just never really
Yeah.
looked at it that way before.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And so I want to know which part of the galactic barrier did Kirk go to when he took the Enterprise out and got, not Decker, what was his name?
Gary Mitchell.
Gary Mitchell, yeah. Where he got his powers.
Yeah.
Maybe it was close to Organia, because that's kind of where they were early in that first season.
Oh, that's an interesting point. So he went south. At
Yeah.
least the way they've got this drawing oriented. They went
Right,
south.
yeah, Galactic South. Yep.
Could be. Could be.
Good.
Yeah.
Anyways, I thought I liked the map. I liked how all the populations and stuff and what their export is, like the Ferenginar making platinum batteries. I thought that was funny.
You don't want to think about that too much. But all the talk of lithium batteries these days, I thought that was kind of funny. Platinum batteries. Well, they had to do something with platinum. You had to have
Right,
that.
right.
So.
And then I mean, I did like how Ben was having like visions of his mom or his past life where he kind of knew. I mean, he even said something about gumbo, and then somebody asks, but I guess it was Bev who asks, what's gumbo? And he's like, I don't know. It sounds good.
Exactly. Suppressed memories.
Right.
I don't know how this works, but there is a version of Sisko that was able to grab Kalis and bring him to this version of Earth. But there's also a version of Sisko which has been remade by Lore and is still very much Sisko, but his memories are suppressed. I
Yeah,
mean
right.
that's what's happening. It's just like, okay, so there's two Siskos,
I don't think there's two
technically.
Siskos.
Well, how
Well, I
did
mean, yeah, so when he gets his memories, does he have Ben's memories and Prime Sisko's memories? So he kind of remembers
I
both
think he does.
universes.
I think he does, which is kind of what I'm asking about, is the physical Ben we see here is a recreation by Lore, right? I mean, everything here is a recreation by Lore, but there still exists the Sisko, which was able to pluck Kalis out of the past and plunk him here in the quote future recreation of everything. So was that a different time? So Sisko was able to plunk, demigod Sisko was able to plunk Kalis into the new universe before he was recreated into Lore's thing? Or they're two totally separate entities?
Yeah, I think they're two totally separate entities.
Yeah,
Like
I think the same thing.
the
Yeah,
Sisko
okay.
Prime is gone. His memories were like imbued in that sword, right? When Kalis had the
Oh,
power
okay.
sword in the last issue.
Okay,
And then I guess when
so,
he touched
okay.
Sisko, it just all that knowledge and power of the Prime Sisko went into the Sisko. Well, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
That's the way I
Okay.
took it.
You took it literally as opposed to it's just a copy of his memories or okay.
Yeah,
Well,
either way, I mean,
I'm sure
same thing.
the Magic Batleth is going to do whatever it needs to do for the storyline. Okay, so what's the deal with
So,
that Bev chick?
yeah, Crusher?
Oh, is that supposed to be Crusher?
Yeah, you didn't. Beverly
Oh,
Crusher?
that's right. It is her. Okay.
Oh,
Yeah, I never even put that together
that's funny.
because I don't think it looks like her. I mean,
Well, I
yes,
mean,
she's got
she's
red
always
hair,
really
she's
far
got blue
away.
eyes, and she's got bobbed hair, which is different, but still.
Well, you need short hair when you're making Soylent Green.
Exactly. Okay, so we did not see her on the hobo train, at least in that one panel, or that one or two panels that we saw Kalis and Ben
Yeah,
on the
it's just
box
the two of
car.
them. Yeah.
Oh, okay, so I mean, she could have been in the box car, but it looks more like she's an enemy agent for Lore, who is following them and keeping tabs on them. Because you do see her in Montana or wherever the heck they are. And,
You know what? I didn't even catch that one panel. Oh wow.
yeah.
Yeah, the second to last
And,
panel in the book, she
right.
shows her like wearing a hat and
Yeah, like
watching them.
she's incognito or something. Like
Yeah,
somehow
I
she's
didn't
been
catch
able to
that.
follow them and she's keeping tabs on them for lore. Anyway.
Yeah, but so I mean, so some people are married to their prime spouses, but others aren't. So I mean, like, is there a Wesley in this universe and Jack that
I have
Beverly should
no,
be
it's whatever
meeting?
Lore or Data want. Because you'll notice Jennifer is his original wife, right? That died at Wolf 359. Okay, so she's back, but he's not married to what's her face, the captain of the ship, of
The
the
Orville's doctor, I forgot her name.
yes, her.
Cassidy Yates.
Cassidy
Cassidy
Yates,
Yates.
exactly. So he's not married to Cassidy, although that was the last person he was married to, before everything got rebooted. And you don't see the baby kid, right? Between
No.
her and Cassidy had a kid,
Right. Yeah. Ben
a
and Cassidy.
girl. So you don't see her. So it's whatever, I guess, Lore or Data chose to do.
So I get some of it, but what happened with the captains and that little firefight on that 2-page spread? So you're saying they destroyed those three ships and
Yep. But the captains escaped.
and then they'll come back in a couple of years.
Exactly. In like 5 years, they'll build back up again.
So are they beaming themselves away, or did Lore
Lore did it.
take them? Lore did it.
Or Lore made it happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't
Because.
sure if it was something they were doing, like they were beaming themselves out, or if it was some sort of hand of God thing that was beaming them out and making them come back again in 5 years.
Well, in some way, Lore is making it possible to happen. Exactly how much agency the three captains had in making that happen, I do not know. But I mean, Lore is just putting everybody through the same thing over and over again so he could just get sadistic glee in breaking everybody and then just giving them just that much more hope so that they can come back and be beaten down again. What a
Right.
poop head.
That is one way to word it. Yes.
Yes.
A poop head.
A crazy poop head.
So, Alexander's much more confident in this universe.
Oh my God, yes. And look, he's got Nightwing butt cheeks.
Yeah, that uniform works for him.
Like, oh my God, look, it's Nightwing. It's Nightwing, right?
Yeah, no, Nightwing, they
Dick
always draw.
Grayson. Yeah, he was always drawn with amazing the butt cheeks of a dancer or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he was a gymnast.
Yeah, there you
Makes
go.
sense.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, I don't know. The story's interesting, but it's also kind of like, well, anything can happen and it doesn't really matter, right? I mean, Bashir shows up for one page and then is killed by Shax, who's a paw wraith and just
Right.
shows up out of nowhere, kills him, and then leaves. You know, it's just like, okay, so in this universe, absolutely anything can happen, and
Yes.
there's no real stakes. Or at least I don't feel like there's real stakes because it's just like, eh, yeah. I mean, you, any, I even think that Bashir is going to show back up before the end of the series, right? So I kind of feel like they're rebooting it over and over again, or. Did he only do it once? Because when he's talking
Well,
to Data,
everybody.
it kind of sounds like they're retooling, they're constantly retooling things, right?
Well, yeah, so lore threatens the idea, I'll start all over again. Give me a reason, I'll start all over again. So that way everybody dies. And
Right.
then, so yeah, you're right that there isn't, quote, stakes, because ultimately everybody is a recreation of what lore wants, and he can do it over and over again. Yeah, I mean, he could bring people back into existence, probably. Well, he can. He can. He could have brought Bashir back.
Right.
One second later, he could have done it, I think. But.
Yeah. And when he's talking to Data, and Data's like saying, you know, mind four is doing this, mind three is doing that, mind two is doing this. What is that? What is the mind thing? Because it kind of seemed like it was all, you know, mind four was the gamma quadrant, mind three was the delta quadrant, mind one was the alpha quadrant. So.
Yeah, I think they're just semi-autonomous things that are taking care of the minutiae.
So just
So kind of like autonomic systems that are just keeping all the details going. And then when lore wants to, or data wants to insert themselves into events, then they do whatever they want.
right.
But all the minutiae going on, they don't want to be screwing around with all that. They just farm that out to the minds. That's my
Gotcha.
theory.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. It's like some sort of AI program.
Yeah, something
Gotcha.
like that. I think the artwork is really good in this book, and I especially love the looks on Lore's face. So in the opening page, with the sort of Book of Genesis opening that starts from the top of the page and worked its way down, and then at the bottom it shows Lore's twisted face, and him just simply says, "I did it because I wanted to see you squirm or watch you squirm."
Right.
I think the look on the face is perfect. I think Laura's face in some other panels, there's a panel. Well, anyway, there's multiple panels that I think are absolutely awesome. There's one where Laura's looking almost like a benevolent, nice guy, but you know he's just a sadistic whatever. And then there's another one where he's really angry and threatening to reboot the whole universe again. And I just think if they had acting awards for comic books, I think he would at least get a nomination for best actor in a comic book.
You don't think he's overacting? Like
I think
hamming
he's
it
on
up a
the
little bit.
edge. I think he's on the edge. You got to be on that edge.
Yeah, so this is what, David Tinto? I'm not familiar with his name. Have we seen his work before?
We probably have, but I do not remember the name.
Yeah.
But he's quite good.
Yeah, no, he's quite good.
Yeah.
The nitpicks I have are definitely not his fault, right? I don't really care for the way the Enterprise looks with all the extra bits and bobs glued on.
Oh, yeah,
But
that's true.
I don't think that was his call. I mean, I think that was just the way it was depicted in earlier issues, so kind of how we have to have it. And then, just the temple with Lore's mouth open and the staircase goes up into his mouth. I mean,
Yeah. Over the
it
top.
looks like what it's supposed to be, but it looks so silly.
Yeah,
Like when you go to church, you have to enter through his mouth.
well, I'm sure not everybody can go through that mouth. I'm sure the unwashed are not allowed in, but who knows?
So it's just Kira and the other Vedics or whatever they're called in this world.
Yeah, I guess. And who, and I'm assuming that Lore and Data are in that building. So the whole conversations between those two are happening from within the building, and that's how Sato is able to overhear him and stuff. But and also, I guess that's why they keep their dungeons in that building. So
Good point. Good point.
Bajor is an important place in the Loreverse. So do you think this David Tennant actually had anything to do with Aeon Flux artwork, or is he just a fan of Aeon Flux artwork and some of his stuff looks a little reminiscent of it?
And where does it look like Eon Flux?
Well, I think there's multiple places where it looks like Aeon Flux. The M was that MTV?
Yeah,
Where? Yeah,
the anime.
the
Or it's not anime, but
oh,
the
is it
animated
anime?
TV. No, well,
It's
it's an animated
animated.
TV show, right?
Yeah, so it was almost like the original Simpsons on the Tracy Ullman show, where they just have like little short cartoon vignettes that would pop up during the show. So Aeon Flux was kind of like that, right? I have no recollection what show it was in, what larger show it was in. That wasn't a whole show by itself, was it?
No, it was
Seemed to
I
be
think it was
short.
called Liquid TV or something like that. It was
Oh,
a
okay, there you go.
Adult
Liquid
Swim
TV.
thing they had going on.
Okay.
Or no,
Well,
it was on MTV, not Cartoon Network. But yeah. No, there was just a bunch of little different
short things.
segments in that show.
And when I first saw, not to go off on too bit of a tangent, when I first saw that, and they had this really sexy, over the top spy person who was like falling from a plane, a typical James Bond thing, and then she's getting out her binoculars and she's looking at all these different things, and you're thinking, well, what, how cool. She's not worried about dying. She's worried about gathering all this intel. And then you think at the last minute, she's going to have a separate parachute or something. And no, she just splats on the ground. I thought that was so unique.
I don't remember that one.
You don't remember that one? Okay.
No.
Well, that was the first one I saw. And it was like, wow, this is cool. Well, I think some of the stuff, I mean, it's not exactly one for one, but especially, when they're showing Worf on the Enterprise D and he's got his command staff around him. I mean, just looking at that, especially that lady with the huge hair.
Yeah, I think that's
I
supposed
don't
to be.
know. It just,
Is that supposed to be Troy? Maybe the hair.
is
I could
that?
see. Yeah, I think so. I'm
Anyway,
assuming that's who it is. I don't know.
I had an Aeon Flux vibe
Oh, well, no, I
from that and
didn't.
a few other panels, but okay, fine. It's just me then.
So the guy who
Anyway,
made Eon Flux
really good artwork.
made a Rugrats. So it's like
Rugrats.
the same mind that made Rugrats made Eon Flux, and then there was a
Oh,
Tomb
really?
Raider animated show, and he did a couple episodes of, which were really good.
Oh, wow. Okay. I did not know that.
Yeah, but I mean, the style from Eon Flux and Rugrats couldn't be more different,
Yes.
right?
Yeah, right.
I did not catch that. But speaking of the artwork, is the Borg made out of wood?
With the cubes? What do you mean?
Yeah, right. Yeah, they look like they're like cardboard.
Hold on, let me I gotta get I don't remember that, but let me try to get to the page. Oh, there it is.
Yeah, when they're in the
Well, okay,
briar
just
patch.
because they're tan colored instead of being black.
Yeah, but there's no like, doesn't look like there's bits and bobs to it. It just looks like cardboard, like you just had a bunch of refrigerator boxes and put them together.
And you were able to staple together a board cube
Exactly.
out of refrigerator cardboard boxes. Could be.
Exactly.
Could be. And it is the same color as most cardboard boxes. Yes.
And it's weird that the seam, you see like the seams that go like up and down, they don't match to the seams that are on the other side. Like the bottom seam does not lead into the seam on the left side, right? Or the seam on the right side. So it's just like they're
Well, it
like
doesn't have to be
independent.
absolutely symmetrical.
I don't know. If you had a seam in there, you would think that the seam would go
Would
on all
match
four
up on every
sides. Yeah,
side?
you would think, right?
Well, I maybe. Maybe if they didn't match up, they would be better structural integrity. You don't know. I don't know.
Yeah,
Good
I don't know.
point. Good point.
But yeah, I kept waiting for them to explain that in this universe, the Borg make their stuff out of wood or something. I don't know.
I would. Yeah, so it's tan. These are tan board cubes. And for whatever reason, they've got bright lime green windows. I don't know. Little rectangles of lime green color. Unexpected. And even some of the dialogue boxes or bubbles have a lime green font in them. I don't know why.
Well, anytime the Borg are talking there, it's the lime green font.
Is it lime green?
Yeah.
Lime green. I mean
That
green, but lime
yellowish.
green?
Yeah, it's like
Okay.
a yellowish green color. Neon
Okay. Well,
green.
that is yellowish green
Yeah.
in this. Anywho, so the Vulcans and the Boar, or at least Spock anyway. So Hugh is a lot more like the version he was when he had most of the bits and bobs took out of him,
Yeah, the Picard
right?
version, right.
A Picard version, exactly. And then Spock looks like Borg Light. He doesn't have that. I mean, you can't see his hands, but he just seems a lot more Vulcan than
Right.
Borg.
Yeah, he
And
doesn't have
then,
anything on his chest or anything.
right. And then the few guys in the background look a little bit more like normal Borgs.
Right.
So, anyway, I guess you could do it any way you want to. So this is how they chose to do it.
Right. Yeah, this issue is just a setup. So, I mean, it's doing its job. It's giving us a little taste of all of our favorite characters, but not explaining much. Just like giving you a hint of these people exist, but they're not the people we know of.
Well, definitely
We're
not.
not, right.
They are what Lore wants them to be. So he's got Shax, who is this big, huge power wraith, okay, who goes around with the hugest guns in the world, I mean, arms, and then uses his Bajoran directed energy pistol. So that's the same thing that Kira used to use, and uses that to blast Bashir, which I thought was interesting. Having Bashir continue to be like a spy kind of guy in this scenario was okay. I guess that goes along with a little bit of Deep Space Nine, but a lot of the novels that were post the TV show with Bashir.
Right. Yeah, so we'll see.
Gosh, I did not connect Bev with Beverly Crusher at all. God, what a miss. Okay, anyway, that's still bugging me.
But yeah, where's Picard? Where's Janeway?
Riker?
Where's the other
I
people
know.
that just weren't in these books but should exist in this universe?
Well, but they're focusing on all the characters that were at one point or another in Defiant or Star Trek
Yeah,
2022.
I get it. Would like a little cameo from somebody. Maybe showing Picard, he's like the janitor on the Enterprise.
Yeah, he's a janitor in Lore's Citadel or
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
whatever. My big question, my last thing I'm going to say about the comic is, who is the god that Sato's gonna free in the next book?
Data.
Data?
I don't know.
Well, okay. So my first thing was, we haven't seen T'Lyra yet, right?
Oh, good
So, and
point.
T'Lyra is supposed to have the last Organian lady in his body, right? Or
Right.
at least at one point that was the case. And then it was kind of squishy. Then they were kind of. Then it seemed like she sacrificed herself to save the Theseus at one point. It was not clear. So my first guess was Talir slash whatever that last Organian's name is.
Yeah, good point. And that would give them the Sato connection too, so.
Right. But who else? Sisko's mother? I didn't think so, but maybe? Oh, and then the last thing that came to me was Q. What if it was Q? And it was like, no, they're probably going to keep Q out of all this. It just makes things more messy.
Q Junior.
Q Junior could be. I'm thinking it's Talir slash the lady.
Yeah, Talir would be the obvious guess.
Yeah.
Would make the most sense
Any
with this group
other
of people.
potential candidates?
None that were jumping out at me.
Okay. Okay, well, what else you have to say?
I'm good.
Okay.
You ready to move on to
Please.
our favorite one?
Ah, not.
All right, so we'll do section 31. It's entitled Emperor Born. Three covers. Cover A is by Megan Levens and Charlie Kirchhoff, and it shows Emperor Georgiou up in the top right-hand corner. And then we see a young Georgiou from her time back when she was in Emperor School that we saw in the movie. And then below that, we see like two people fencing together or something like that. Cover B, they say, is the movie poster, and it's just a photo of Georgiou on a yellow background. And then the incentive cover is by Annie Wu, and it shows Georgiou like standing in looks like snow or something, just a lot of white. And then we have the writer of this is Alessa Wong. Artist is by Megan Levins. Colorist is by Charlie Kirchhoff. Letterer is by Jody Troutman. Design and production, Neil Yutaki. Group editor, Heather Antos. Editorial assists by Cassandra Jones. So the story starts off, and this is a prequel to the movie, by the way. The story starts off on Georgiou's space station, which is called the Bahram. And the former empress is visited by a mysterious figure who's just all in black, and he buys her a drink. And then he just casually asks, how did she get here? And thus starts the flashback. So we see that 18 kids have been selected to attend the Emperor Hunger Games Battle Royale classes. Here they will be given various tasks, and the last one still alive will become the Emperor of the Terran Empire. First day of class, a kid talks out of turn, and the teacher just kills him. Then all the students are given knives, and they are instructed to kill two more. After a little hesitation, the group then starts to fight each other, and eventually two of them are murdered. The instructors watch this from another room, and they point out the high potential of Georgiou and a boy named San. Over the course of, I guess, months, the group is given physical and mental challenges, each one leading to death of at least one classmate. So if you fail while under torture, you're dead. You come in last place in a race, dead. You lose a game of Starship Battleship, dead. So over all this time, San and Georgiou have built up a secret friendship, while Georgiou is just ruffling the feathers of all the other girls in the class. Eventually, the petty classmates rat them out to the instructors, and they all have a confrontation where they find the two lovebirds on the roof stargazing. Georgiou and San are given two swords, and they're ordered to kill each other. They do fight a bit, but then Georgiou turns and kills the onlooking snitches instead. This leaves only San and Georgiou alive from the class. She tells the teacher that she is the future Emperor God and that the teachers should be following her orders. She then challenges the main teacher to a fight. He accepts and quickly dies. The other teachers agree that it's time for the final test. San and Georgiou are each given a vial of poison and are to return home and kill their families. We're now back in the present where Georgiou has been telling this whole story to the mysterious person and says, "Let's drink to gods and their legacy unending. To be continued in Star Trek 31 movie."
Oh boy, I want to see that now.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. So, who's the mysterious guy supposed to be? Because none of this dialogue matches up with her meeting up with that black gentleman, the one that's part of Section 31 that kind of sets her on the whole path. So,
Right.
at first, I thought it was supposed to be him, but I don't know for sure. She definitely doesn't tell this whole story to him in the movie. And it seems weird that someone just says, "Hey, how'd you end up here?" And then she just blurts out this whole story. That seemed
Yeah,
weird.
it's the whole thing's weird. And I think the guy who's setting this up, it doesn't matter who he is because they only show him as a black silhouette on the last page, right?
Right.
And you can't really see who he is at the beginning. He's just somebody that gets her talking. I don't think it matters who he is.
So she just tells everybody the story that gets her a drink.
The whole idea that she would be that wanting to talk about her backstory, if supposedly, I mean, wasn't she supposedly have feelings of regret about how many of the things she did in her life, at least in the Section 31 movie? She definitely seemed to have regret about how she treated San.
Right. Yeah, and that's how Discovery ended her story arc too, is that she had regained her humanity and wasn't the evil person that she was when
Exactly.
she was in the Terran Empire. But this version of her doesn't seem too upset about all the bad stuff she did if she's just
Oh,
bragging
yeah.
about it to anybody that gets her a drink.
Oh, yeah. So, like the movie, what really happened and how the character's arc was going in a Discovery TV show doesn't matter. This is a whole new thing.
Right.
And maybe that's fine if it was good, but I don't think it was. And I don't think the book's any better.
Right. Yeah, and I watched the movie and I rewatched the beginning of it just to kind of see if we could find out who this guy was from the beginning of the movie.
Oh, wow, you're taking this
And
serious.
yeah, so in the first 5 minutes of the movie, they have the flashback of her killing her family and explaining everything. And then it flashes to the bar, and she gets, she has a drink with that guy. I don't remember his name, but none of what they say
The
here has
guy who's a
been
member of the
said
team.
there. Right. The one that recruits her, right? Because I mean, when she does have a drink with him, and almost immediately she's like, "All right, what does Section 31 want?" And then she names off all the other people in Section 31 that's in the bar at that time. She doesn't like do this reminiscing thing. But I mean, it was just like annoying. Like the first 5 minutes of the show, the young Georgiou explained to her parents about the Hunger Games type classes and that she and Stan are the last ones alive. I didn't need this comic to tell me again. It's like I was like, you've already explained this story. There
Well,
was so many
it
other
didn't really.
characters in Section 31 movie that I think would have made a better one-off comic.
Well, okay, but it kind of covered different things, right? I mean, the movie really focused on her going back home and killing her family,
Right.
where this one just hinted at it. It didn't actually show it, right?
Running.
So they are covering a little different territory that is extremely related. I mean, this book is definitely referring back to that event. But they're
Right.
not really showing it again.
They're not showing that, but in her the little girl's dialogue in the movie, she says everything that happened here. We were part of a class. We had to do all these tasks and eventually, the two of us are still alive because we made a secret pact, and now we have to kill each other. But then we had to kill our family. I mean, she says it all. She says it all in the first 5 minutes of the book movie. So I don't know. This whole comic was just like, eh. I wanted something else, I guess.
We really didn't need the movie, and we really didn't need this book to be made.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
And I mean, we're talking about the Terran Empire. Why would they pick a bunch of kids and then do a Hunger Games type elimination? I mean, it's just That makes no sense. That
Well,
is not how the emperors were chosen in any other Star Trek medium.
definitely, yeah. Well, but we don't really, do we know that we don't really know the details of how emperors were selected. I
We
mean,
don't.
but I do agree with you. This, the bloodthirsty alternate universe Terran Empire.
Right.
So, these guys are wackadoodle. And quite frankly, their whole society is wackadoodle, I think. I
Sure.
mean, most everybody that we were exposed to, except maybe Spock, right? Because Spock seemed to not be a completely horrible person. Most people were completely horrible people. And these kids are acting like, I mean, they're kind of, I mean, especially at the very beginning, where the first one had his head chopped off. And then they were told they had knives underneath their chairs and only two more people need to die. And then they close up the thing. And
Right.
the way many of the kids are reacting might be a little bit more like how somebody, in our universe would react, as opposed to how kids would react that grew up in the Terran Empire. I
Right,
just thought
knowing that
that
the only
was.
way you can succeed is by killing your boss and taking over their
Well,
job.
yeah. I mean, are you that surprised, kid? I mean, one guy says, they can't be serious, can they? Well, yeah. And then the Chunky Tilly lookalike. I don't want to die. It's like, oh my God. What universe were you brought up in? What empire were you brought up in? Anyway, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I would have liked to have known how they got picked. I mean, how did these 18 kids in the whole Terran Empire get picked to be part of it?
Yep. Don't know.
And
Don't
then would
know.
you. All these people are really gonna, I mean, all these people have lived their whole lives under the empire, killing in order to get to that top teaching spot, right? And then you're just gonna bow your knee to some little kid that happens to be the last one alive in the competition? That just seems weird.
Well, speaking
Doesn't
of
make
that,
sense.
I will say the one thing that did surprise me is that Giorgio turning the tables and getting the proctor, who you hated this guy since the first,
Right.
challenging that guy to a duel to get, to save herself and Zan. So I was not expecting that. And that was like the only thing that happened in the book I was not expecting.
That was
Everything
the
was
only
very
one.
obvious, except for that in this book, because of either it's bad writing or because they already covered it in the movie.
Right. Yep. No. I mean, I get that. I mean, I've watched a lot of those young adult book adaptations and stuff. I watched all the Hunger Games. I watched all the, Ender's Game, this type of concept. I mean, even the Halo books, right? I mean, we've seen, the what happens to little kids when they're put together, and then, it's basically, you have to learn to be the biggest and baddest, right? So I didn't like how they suddenly switched gears, and then like she's in the bathroom washing her face, and then like these mean girls show up and like, hey, we don't
Mean
like you.
girls.
It's just like, where is this coming from? Is this now like a CW, high school drama thing? Like, you better watch because we're gonna. It's like, really? It just seems so out of place to have a bathroom scene
Bathroom mean
bullying
girl scene.
shot. It's just like that. This is in the wrong story.
And then who was the lead mean girl? Tilly. It was Tilly. It was the chunky red-haired kid.
I don't
She
think it
was the
is
meanest
Tilly.
girl. What?
It's not Tilly.
It looks like her.
It does
Chunky
kind of look like her.
red-haired. I went ahead and grabbed a just to remind myself of the details of Tilly. You take a look at the Tilly still and this chick. It's like they're very similar.
Yeah, but we know Tilly grew up to be an adult in the Terran Empire, and this girl does not.
Oh, yeah, she did. W
Yeah,
wasn't
because she
she?
was a captain. She was a
She was a
captain of a
captain.
ship.
She was the
Yeah.
captain of Discovery. Right, right,
Right.
right. But
Right.
it's a joke. It's a joke. But she does remind me of Tilly.
I can see it.
Only probably even shorter.
Right.
A little heavier than Tilly. This girl. Anyway.
Yeah. But anyways, I mean, you agree that it's a little out of place, the
Yes, I agree.
Okay.
I agree. There's a lot of things that are out of place in this thing.
Yeah,
May
like what?
I mention a few other things that are out of place?
Yeah, I'll let
Just to
you.
wrap up my comments, because I really don't have that much more to say. Here's the first thing. A pinky swear.
Yeah, that
Giorgio
was
and
weird.
San does a pinky swear to consummate their alliance? Really? I mean, that seems so
So
childish.
they show that in the movie, but it's more of a they hold hands kind of thing. They don't do a pinky thing. But that gesture is in the movie. So,
Okay.
but
Well,
like I said, I went back and watched it, and I was just like, oh no, there's
no,
that
if you,
pinky
well,
thing's
okay,
up
you
there.
watched it again, and were the two pinkies linked?
Yeah. No.
No, they were hands. They were holding
Yeah,
each
they were
other's
hands. They
hands.
right.
That's way different than a pinky swear.
I agree. I agree. This was
Them
so
holding their
silly.
hands is fine. It even indicates romance. Fine.
Right.
But a pinky swear? Jesus. Sorry.
And what was
I'm
the other one?
sorry. The other thing is just some of the hardware that was involved. So when the one blonde-haired kid had to shoot his coworkers or one of his teammates, he was handed what looks a lot like a TOS phaser. Or
Right.
maybe it was a Discovery phaser, who knows? Although it looks most like a TOS phaser, but not 100% TOS phaser. Now, considering how old Giorgio is, this must have happened a long time ago before. I mean, if you're assuming that the time frames are roughly equal between the mirror universe and our universe, then this must have happened a long time ago, way before they were using TOS
Right.
style phasers. So I thought that was a little weird. It's like, okay, you chose to use something that looks an awful lot like a TOS phaser. It should be more like a Kelvin phaser. I mean, shouldn't this be a long time? Giorgio's kind of old.
Yeah, it should be more like a, maybe not quite an Archer phaser, but
Oh, but yeah, probably later than Archer, but still, it would be
right.
older. Okay, so I thought that was odd. And then the
Yeah,
other thing
so
was kind of.
real quick in that same shot, and maybe that's what you're about to go to, but the
Okay.
ships that are in the
Yes.
little, okay.
Yeah,
Is that what
you go
you're about to
ahead.
talk about?
That's what I was
Yeah,
going to
so
say.
they're definitely they look more like the Kelvin universe, Enterprise and other ships, which would come much later and is in a completely different universe.
Well, okay, so I thought that the bigger ship looked more like Enterprise E than anything else. Now, the nacelles are different. The nacelles, actually, quite frankly, the nacelles are dead ringers more for the Titan A in Picard.
Okay.
But that's in the future. That's in the far future.
Right.
And even Enterprise E is in the future. So, what do you have ships looking like? Designs that were ships that are in the far future. Why do you have that? I mean, quite frankly, you should be having stuff that looks more like the Kelvin, or at least something no more advanced than the Discovery time frame.
Right.
And then the other smaller ship, to me, looked like the Maquis ship that they used in the first episode of Voyager.
Yeah, little guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing I could use to justify the more advanced ships was that the Defiant, the TOS Defiant, ended up in the mirror universe during Archer's time. So technically they would have had about 100 years of working with future tech where they could have, theoretically they could have been more advanced during this time than what
Oh boy,
Prime Giorgio was, but that's stretching it. That's stretching
that is an
it.
interesting justification.
Because we saw what the mirror Enterprise looked like, and it didn't look any different than the TOS Enterprise, so it doesn't quite hold water, but I'm like, all right, I'll give them that just because maybe they would have been exposed to that tech early,
Okay. There you go.
but
Well, that's
anyways.
all I have to say.
But this phaser that they use makes bang sounds and not bzz. When he has to shoot one of his team members, it says bang.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. It looks like a phaser, but it's actually a projectile weapon.
Exactly.
That's funny.
All right. Well, that was my last comment.
Okay, so this was a forgettable book, in my opinion, but interesting to finally see the details of the universe that Lore came up with to
Right.
replace the real one
Right. Which we'll get to
in the other book.
continue next episode. So we'll get
Indeed.
Lore War number 2 and 3, which were in the ongoing Star Trek and the ongoing Defiant books. So
There you go.
bring in some more characters from those titles.
Exactly. Which we'll be doing next episode.
Yes, we
There you go.
will.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for joining us on the review.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at first name ST Comic, second name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.